In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, August 26, 2011, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And the planning for Hurricane Irene in full force, and we'll tell you all about that throughout the course of the program today. And we may even get to that a little bit on today's Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by my panel of experts. And it's a great lineup for you. And the story's already posted online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so you can follow along. John Kaminsky, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, choosing his top three federal news stories this week. Good to see you, sir.
Well, hello there. How you doing?
I'm preparing to run right out of here after the show ends today and go buy myself a couple of pallets of water, of bottled water, just in case. You know, for some reason, I guess when we get 10 inches of rain, you can't drink any of that. So I've got
that's environmentally unsound to do it that way. Fill your bathtub instead.
Well, see, that's a good idea. That makes a lot more sense. The Green Committee here at Federal News Radio would approve of that. Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council is the other selector and panelist on the Federal News Countdown. Are you ready for all the rain?
I'm all set.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here today. You gentlemen have chosen good stories. Surprisingly busy week when it comes to news events for the third week of August. Usually this is the time where people write me and say, do I have to choose three stories? And yet there's a lot going on, so we'll get rolling immediately with
number three.
John Kaminsky, your third most important federal news story of the week's from FCW Federal Computer Week, and the headline is White House Memo Puts COOs in the Hot Seat. What is going on here?
Well, the great news is they're talking about chief operating officers.
Just that anybody's paying attention.
The position was something that was created as a part of the old National Performance Review back in 93, and that was typically the deputy secretary, the deputy agency head. And it's been evolved over the years as to what their role is. And the Government Performance and Results Act amendments, or the Modernization Act from earlier this year, for the first time made it a statutory thing and took recommendations from GAO and other places and began to define the role. And now the White House not only has named who these people are officially, but given them things that they need to do. And what this memo does is it specifically says that they have to do two things right now. One is to reduce wasteful spending, which is part of the president's and the vice president's campaign to reduce waste that was announced back in June. And the other thing is to boost performance. So it sounds a little bit like a reprise of the old reinventing government, works better, costs less.
And you like that idea, I imagine.
It.
You're a little biased since you pretty much, you know, constructed that, but that's a whole different issue. Cutting wasteful spending is a great goal, and reducing spending, a great goal, and improving performance, great goal. But how do you measure those so that a year or 5 years from now you know if you've actually done it? Rather than, I mean, is it really just a bottom line deal?
Well, in the case of reducing waste or reducing costs, this is just a really good time to stand back and do some things. That the president in an earlier memo had also talked about chief financial officers taking a role. But to charge the COO, the chief operating officer, with the responsibility for leading this up means that they can begin reaching across the department and across the stovepipes and say, we're going to do things in a more integrated way. We're going to work with other departments in a more integrated way. So this opens up and unfreezes a lot of historical bureaucratic channels that have been there in the past.
Just because they can reach across those stovepipes, though, does it mean that you think they will?
When the other memo that the president came out with, which Alan's going to talk about with, give me a budget scenario with a 5% and another budget scenario with a 10% cut from last year's spending, there is all the incentive in the world to be able to pursue this.
All right. John Kaminsky's story number three is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is White House Memo Puts COOs in the Hot Seat, and it's linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Shvatkin, your story number three is from The Washington Post. What should federal offices do if there's another earthquake? And a lot of folks are already saying that Hurricane Irene could be the other earthquake for us to really be thinking about continuity of operations and emergency response.
Absolutely. And It's actually given me an opportunity to reprise some of the issues that we've talked about, because there is a significant difference in the preparation that federal employees need to make and the agencies need to make and contractors. Every time there's a snowstorm or every time there's some other natural disaster, a tornado, whatever, there's always questions. Do I have to report to work? And there are different rules for federal employees than for contractors. And this is another good opportunity to be mindful that both agencies need to be clear if employees and contractors who are working on site are eligible to come to work, and if not, what are the implications of that? And contractors need to be aware of their own rules and what their contracts provide in terms of either teleworking for employees or denied access to facilities.
Back in March, April, when we were looking at a possible government shutdown, you and I talked about this very subject, about the possibility that contractors might try to show up at government facilities and not be able to get in the door, but they're still responsible for working because nobody's told them not to come to work.
That's exactly right, and this was just a good opportunity to refresh people's memory that it's important to think about those things. While you worry about your own personal safety first, there are significant contract implications for something as simple as closing down a government building because it may be unsafe to employees and workers.
What did you see personally in the way that the agencies and the contracting community responded to the earthquake this week? Did you see things that you liked or things that you didn't like, or both?
Well, I was fortunately out of town when the earthquake hit.
So, lucky you.
I was very lucky in that sense. Two things happened. First of all, there was many of the offices, after they evacuated, which they should not have done for an earthquake, then shut down the offices for the day while they were doing the inspections. And so there was no real communications. You had to wait hours in many instances for both federal agencies or OPM to launch their communications processes. And very few of the contractors that I've talked to in the intervening couple of days had a good mechanism for being in touch with their own employees who were on those sites.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, just like later you'll talk about continuity of operations plans for agencies, it's not simply a building burns down or falls down. I mean, there are all kinds of circumstances of continuity of operations where there's an interruption to normal,
mm-hmm.
and that's what requires some attention. On-site versus remote employees, how do you handle time? How do you handle people who are in a non-productive status because they're denied the ability to go to work?
What would facilitate that communication, the agency to contractor and vice versa?
Yeah, but this is a real challenge because it is not just a contract. It is across the whole agencies. In many cases, it's across entire companies that have to do that. Preparation, this ought to be part of the natural planning of the preparation for disaster recovery. What happens if you're denied access to a facility? There has to be a way to be in touch with employees. We saw in numerous circumstances where the phone lines didn't work. I tried to call back to several people to see if my home was standing, because the first reports were that there's some it was centered in Rockville, not Mineral, Virginia. So I got a little nervous about that one.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And phone lines were blocked in. I understand that. I had the privilege of working for AT&T Federal, and we managed a lot of the disaster communication. So that's a normal event. But it made communications difficult, and many of the companies, including my own association, didn't do the outreach to let me know that everybody was safe and mm-hmm. here's what we were doing.
Right. Alan Fotkin's story number 3 in the countdowns from the Washington Post. The headline is, "What Should Federal Offices Do If There's Another Earthquake?" It's Ed O'Keefe's look at how that will be handled or should be handled. And you can read it linked up now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number 2 on the countdown from John Kamensky and Alan Fotkin when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a moment. It's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As a government contractor, you know success is a matter of getting the right players in the right roles with the right goals. Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community and can help you navigate compliance as it relates to employees. You need the right combination of resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status, allowing you to bid on and execute more contracts. Whether you need their complete workforce optimization solution or one of their many business service solutions like recruiting, employment screening, retirement service, organizational planning, or performance and expense management, you can find the right solution for your business from Insperity. More than 100,000 companies are using Insperity HR and business solutions to make their company run better and make more money. Insperity can help turn your vision into reality. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Navy ships are crowded with large metal antennas that can't be hidden or protected when not in use. Engineers are now exploring a unique solution. Since salt water conducts electricity, Navy electrical engineer Daniel Tam thought,
maybe I can utilize the seawater as my antenna element.
After a trip to Home Depot, Tam connected a device called a current probe to a radio and pumped a vertical stream of water through it.
On the ships, the fire hose easily can generate a stream at least 100 feet in the air.
It worked. Height determines frequency and
I can transfer more information using a thicker water stream.
Just turn the water off and the antennas disappear when not in use. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Dr. Ron Ross, Senior Computer Scientist and Information Security Researcher, NIST, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by McAfee.
That's where the real vision for the future kicks in. We've got to be able to have the systems and the infrastructure churn at a rate that even though the systems have been penetrated, the adversary's time on target is so limited that they can't do any damage.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-NO. Or go to McAfee.com/government.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Monday morning's Federal Drive. Former Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff joins us to discuss emergency preparedness and how far we've come since 9/11. And as part of our continuing coverage of 9/11, a government changed, we'll talk with former OPM Associate Director Robert Shea about changes he's seen in the past 10 years. That and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen this week by John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. And we're up to
number two.
Alan Shvatkin's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times, and it's a follow-on to the story on the Office of Management and Budget telling agencies cut 2013 budgets 5 to 10%. Now, I had this conversation with a friend of mine earlier this week, and my view on this is, tell me if you agree with me or not, if you bring a budget to OMB and you say, here's my 5% budget and here's my 10% budget, don't you think they're going to reach for the 10% budget first? The theory being, we'll see if we can live with that. We'll see if we can get that through Congress. And then if that's not possible, we'll go to the 5% budget. But I think that 10% budget's where they're going to go first. What do you think?
I'm not sure that that's their strategy. I think they wanted to push agencies to do the inspection of the programs, to really look strategically at how what the agency's missions are and how they're going to execute them, and to present a plan. Now, I'll give Jack Lew enormous credit. I think he's one of the most respected civil servants we have, that he wants to preserve options for the president to choose among them. Mm-hmm. I think the irony here is that we don't have an FY12 budget yet for the federal agencies,
right,
and the prospect of a continuing resolution looms very large starting at the fiscal year October 1. But the planning for OMB to the agencies is absolutely right. I like the fact that there was a focus on strategy, missions, and looking at the work that the agencies have to do, and specifically said in that memo, you can't use across-the-board cuts. in order to achieve those, that you've got to really focus on your work to be performed. And it ties nicely into what John was talking about earlier, and Will on the in his second story, on performance measures, outcomes to be achieved, not simply inputs, that is, dollars spent.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a watershed year, but it's only going to be the first of many when we'll have this debate, because the trajectory is clearly for spending is down, not up.
John, I've learned in the years that I've been covering this market and I've gotten to know you and a number of your OMB veteran friends and colleagues that a great way to make you guys and ladies sick is to use the term across-the-board budget cuts. You guys hate that term.
Absolutely.
I thought it was really good that Jack Lew went out of his way to say, this isn't what we want. These numbers are top line, but you show us what you want to do underneath.
Yes. And this began actually last year when they said identify the bottom 5% programs
mm-hmm.
that you find the least productive. And so this is not something that's new and just sprung on them. This is a continual message. And now they're saying, okay, now put it in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that agencies have been given more than a year's lead time to be thoughtful about this. Chief operating officers are being empowered with, you're responsible for making these kinds of trade-offs and thinking this through. And I think that what we'll see is a lot more thoughtful cuts. But sometimes the prospect of having to do cuts of this scale give you the opportunity to rethink things that you've kind of wanted to rethink but just never had the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this can actually be a good thing.
It actually makes you want to take the time to find the time to go do it. The whole idea of these that list, the 5% list, seems to me to make this concept much easier and knock out some of the grousing that we heard this week about people saying, well, this is guidance is coming out awfully late in the budget process, and this should have been out in, May or June. Well, I imagine OMB was pretty busy in May and June with the debt limit stuff and so on.
Well, that's right. And the Congress and the president only signed the debt limit agreement on August 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these numbers come pretty close to the trajectory that Congress and the president already agreed to mm-hmm. in the baseline mm-hmm. for fiscal year 13. And now it's options for the president to decide among programs in order to achieve that top line number.
Mm-hmm.
OMB issues this guidance regularly and about now anyway for the final fiscal year preparation. So I'm hopeful, and like so many, this is a continually shifting environment, and I hope agencies aren't – I know they're not just starting their planning. In fact, many of the agencies have been doing a lot of triaging of their programs and activities already mm-hmm. in order to prepare for – if it's not this week or this month's budget exercise, it'll come later in the year.
Yeah, Alan mentioned, John, the matter that we don't have 2012 budgets in place and we're, like 5 weeks away from the end of fiscal 2011. Does that have any bearing on what the agencies are doing for 2013, or is it?
The way the guidance was written is that the 5-10% cut is off of 11, not off of 12.
11
so
enacted,
they know
yeah.
what they've got. So
yeah.
they're working from a firm base.
Mm-hmm. Does that allow OMB to stay on track and have these ready for the president to talk about them, State of the Union, January, and then send them to Congress in February?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. The story, Alan Shvatkin's story number two on the countdown, is headlined, OMB to Agencies Cut 2013 Budgets 5-10%. It's from the Federal Times, and it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Kamensky's story number two on the Federal News Countdown, coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that, well, I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
David McClure, Ph.D., Associate Administrator, General Services Administration Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, commented during the panel discussion, cost-effective IT in the age of mounting cyber threats, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
In the age of transparency, openness, and tsunami of data, I think everybody's going to be under duress to make sense out of the vast treasure trove of information and raw data that they collect, and use it to proactively manage services in a much more, not only cost-effective way, but a high-quality way.
To hear the show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Given the current state of the economy and decreasing federal budgets, there's increasing pressure to achieve efficiencies across the enterprise while delivering the highest quality services to customers and stakeholders. In a time of cutting back, how do organizations keep their IT systems and networks ahead of the negative actors? Booz Allen Hamilton believes federal agencies can meet the recent IT management requirements by optimizing their spend through investment in the right solutions. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, DC's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, August 28th. We're going to be talking fashion, but not that kind of fashion. Kathy Morgan from Citronelle is pouring wines from fashion houses, and Jeff and Barbara Black will be in studio talking about their latest opening.
That's Foodie and the Beast, live next Sunday and every Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
The Diet Yo-Yo. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Like the tide on a beach, the weight of yo-yo dieters fluctuates. It's not one specific diet. Yo-yo dieters struggle to keep lost weight off, losing it and gaining it back in cycles. A longevity study compared lifespan for mice on a high-fat diet, a low-fat diet, and a yo-yo diet. Dr. Edward List is at Ohio University.
Yo-yo dieting was indeed healthier than remaining obese.
The majority of people who diet are considered yo-yo dieters. For those struggling with weight problems, Dr. List suggests,
first and foremost, people lose weight one time, diet and exercise, and keep it off. Live a healthy lifestyle.
The study, supported by the National Institutes of Health, was presented at the 2011 Endocrine Society meeting in Boston. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for August is Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization repairing and providing donated cars to low-income families. A car is the most valuable poverty-fighting tool that can be provided to a low-income family, and Vehicles for Change has awarded over 3,500 cars since 1999. The car increases the opportunity for better employment and family activities never before possible. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is on every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government. Rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and then come in the studio and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. This week, it's Alan Shpotkin of the Professional Services Council and John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And John Kamensky's story number 2 is from GovExec. The headline is OMB Details Agency Obligations Under the Government Performance Act. Hard to believe, isn't it, that you would choose a story about GPRA and GPRA 2 on the countdown?
I don't know. I mean, that's just a...
What did you see in this memo that was new or different or noteworthy?
Well, the cover letter I thought was noteworthy to mm-hmm. start with, and that it wasn't entitled Implementation Guidance for GPRA Modernization Act. It was entitled instead Delivering an Efficient, Effective, and Accountable Government. So this is trying to get away from we're implementing this law to we're trying to do business differently. And I think that sent that signal, and it started with this is the role of the chief operating officer, and this is what we want to get done. So I just thought that that was a very refreshing way of framing this up front.
Mission versus process.
Yes.
And focusing on the mission instead of on the mechanisms.
Absolutely.
Is what struck me. The follow-up to this is a follow-up on the campaign to cut waste. President Biden introduced that back in June.
Vice President.
Did I say President Biden? Oh my heavens! I'm sorry about that. It's Friday, and I'm distracted, I guess, for some reason. Vice President Biden, thank you, is leading this campaign to cut waste effort, and the concept of the all of the program management, performance management, all of that wrapped up in all of this, and ties directly to the budget things that Alan was talking about.
Yes.
in the previous segment. That was what I thought was the most interesting of all of this, is these are not, this is a good story, but it's not the whole story. All of this stuff is connected all together.
Yeah.
Coming out of OMB.
And this notion of setting two-year priority goals so that you know what kinds of things that are important to the agencies, to the administration to focus on, and tracking that stuff on a quarterly basis, and the wonderful stories that are coming out of the administration of where they're doing this and the impact it's having and the changes that are occurring. I think that with the stuff they've been doing for the past 2 years of trying to basically try this out, and then as they launch this for real, mm-hmm, under the new law, next year, I think is going to be very exciting.
Now, they're laying the requirements out very clearly, Alan. Is there a risk that in laying them out so clearly and that there won't be much wiggle room for agencies if they see ways that they might be able to meet the spirit of these without necessarily sticking to the letter of these?
Sure, there's always a risk that these become checklist and,
yeah,
formulaic approaches rather than the kind of reasoned and detailed analysis of the programs. But remember that Jeff Zients has two hats that he wears on a daily basis. He's the deputy director for management, but he's also the government's chief performance officer. And that focus on performance, on outcomes to be achieved, is really permeates this whole initiative. They've made it clear to the agencies what's expected of them. This is not a new initiative in a sense, but using the implementation, this is not a compliance issue. This is a results, mm-hmm, and it drives to the budget. President's made it clear, Jeff Zients has made it clear, that the agency's performance efforts will be taken into account in the budget. If it is, it'll have far more impact than any memo that might be written.
This story says the memo also commences in time for publication of the fiscal 2013 budget next February. OMB's efforts to set interim federal priority goals based on agency priority goals. Now, the point of that is to tie together, if there are cases where multiple agencies are headed in the same direction, try to tie those, yeah, together and pull them along together.
And a great example of something that's underway already is the Veterans Administration, or Veterans Affairs, and HUD are working jointly on reducing the number of homeless veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And they set a target 2 years ago of reducing it to, I think it's 49,000. When they started, it was like about 100,000. It's down to 75,000. They think that they'll meet the target towards the end of this year of, mm-hmm, of 49,000, with a longer-term goal of reducing it even further.
Writing these goals down, I mean, when I have goals that I want to achieve, it helps me to write them down. You break them down. This is the same idea here. What do you think of the two-year time frame? Too long, too short, just about right? Doesn't matter?
What it does is it holds the people that are in those jobs accountable now. You don't want to set a goal for 10 years from now because you're not going to be there as a political appointee.
Mm-hmm.
And so by bounding it to something that is something you know that they're going to be in office most likely at that point, gives them a sense of real accountability,
mm-hmm,
and for delivering.
Is it long enough for somebody to accomplish a goal, or an organization to accomplish a goal, though, given what it can take to change culture and process inside an agency?
And that's why you can. It does say you can set longer-term goals,
mm-hmm,
but you have to focus on the two-year chunk.
Mm-hmm.
It may take 20 years to get to Mars. But what's going to happen for the NASA administrator over the next 2 years?
Yeah.
And what will he or she wind up committing to?
Is 2 years long enough for the contracting community to get some sense of where the agencies are headed?
Well, 2 years is about nine different budgets.
But and supplementals.
And supplementals and, yeah. And continuing resolutions. And so, but at least it is a start. No, that's not a long enough planning horizon for the execution of it. But it will set, if it's embedded into the budget, in the president's budget, that becomes a set of priorities that people will begin to execute against, assuming the Congress goes along with that. Mm-hmm. It is the openers for debate. But linking performance and budget is absolutely essential.
Yeah. This story is linked up at federalnewsradio.com. It's John Kaminsky's story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown. The headline is OMB Details Agency Obligations Under Government Performance Act. And, of course, all of our stories are linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number 1, as chosen this week by Alan Shpotkin and John Kaminsky, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit cdwg.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how scalable Cisco switches can help improve collaboration by seamlessly connecting your communications.
The numbers mount, and so does the need of the more than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. They are coming home, and you can help their transition by joining the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing direct programs for our injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Jeff Zients is the government's chief performance officer.
This is a continuation of the effort that we've had ongoing since the beginning of the administration, and today's an important day to be pulling all the performance information together in one site and opening it up to the public. We'll continue to add new areas. I mentioned data centers and our consolidation efforts there. The public also ramps up accountability, and we'll also have feedback, which will be invaluable for agency performance.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Federal Drive.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown. Consists of the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by people who are experts in the world of the federal government. John Kaminsky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Alan Shpotkin of the Professional Services Council are choosing the stories in the countdown this week, and we're up to
number one.
John Kaminsky, your number one story of the week is from The Post, the Office of Management and Budget, putting accountability online, the debut of performance.gov. What'd you think when you logged on for the first time?
When I logged on, I was like, wow, look at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going through and drilling down, and you're able to drill down and drill down and drill down. So, for example, they have 8 focus areas. So this now has becomes a one-stop shop for what's going on in the administration in terms of government reform type things.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the human resources, they have the acquisition, they have the IT, they link up the IT dashboard that had been going on. So it's all now in one place. And they provide some context as to where this stuff is coming from, why it's important as a government-wide overview. But when you go into individual initiatives, for example, in the human resources one, They have something on the hiring streamlining process. But you can drill down to each agency, and not only can you find out where they're at in terms of how many days they've shaved off the process, but also how satisfied are the managers with the quality of people that they're being able to get through this process. So it's not eyewash. This is drilled down. And then what you can do is you can click on an agency and what is going on in that agency. And it has the picture of their chief human capital officer and what they are doing specifically around that initiative in their own agency.
Now, that scared people at the beginning of all of the dashboards, Alan, that names and faces would be next to these, not for privacy reasons, but for accountability reasons. If somebody comes onto this site and things aren't up to snuff, people will know exactly whose responsibility it is.
Well, that's right, and they should be held accountable for it. The senior leader in the agency is responsible, and one of the good things that this administration has done is that prior ones is to designate people who are responsible and hold them accountable for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of dashboards generally. I think they have the risk of being somewhat superficial. I must admit that I've not taken a look at this one just yet. But transparency is clearly a key component of this. And I think as we'll get to more of the so what of these, right now I think there's good information, the what about these various initiatives, and dashboards can help. But just like the dashboards on the car, they're indicators. They're not answers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to be very willing to dig harder for the answers. And I'm concerned that it allowed too simplified decision-making by relying on dashboards. I know that's not John's view or intent, and I know it's not Jeff Zients' view, but others don't may not be as sophisticated in this area.
Is that possible, John, that folks could misinterpret or underinterpret even the kind of information that's provided by sites like performance.gov and the other dashboards?
Well, what's interesting is some dashboards, like if you go to the Patent and Trademark Office, they have this wonderful dashboard with little dials that sort of the arrows bounce around and it gives you a number. That doesn't come with much context. It doesn't tell you why or how to interpret it and stuff. So that's a risk of misinterpreting a very simple but beautiful looking dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
What the performance.gov does is it does provide context, and it's more of a narrative thing, and it's not like a scorecard of red, green, and yellow. It has a lot more nuance available to understanding what's going on. So it's not just a quick flash. The challenge, I think, is for them to be able to update this on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
The new GPRA Modernization Act requires for high priority goals quarterly updates. These things that are being reported on these focus areas are not subject to that law. But if they can update the progress on this stuff on a quarterly basis, this will be dynamite.
Don't you think, though, that just the fact that it's up will drive that demand for the updates, because people who are paying attention to this stuff, whether it's NGAs or the Office of Management and Budget themselves, will be coming and going, hey, Alan, your picture's on there, and I haven't seen anything for a while. Let's get something going here.
That would be nice, but that wasn't what Robert Shea's experience was with the part. Is that they thought when that part came out that all these people would be rushing to the website and downloading stuff and using it, and it didn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so much how much do people download and use the stuff, but oftentimes it's the discipline of creating it and organizing it that drives performance in the agency. It's not so much that it needs to be driven from outside.
Mm-hmm. So this is a case, because normally I think it's fair to say in government process doesn't necessarily drive results, but it sounds like you're suggesting that in this case that might work.
One of the things in organizational theory is that if you get a process that is integrated, it then becomes part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent to which you have a regular ongoing process, it's going to affect behavior, and it's going to affect ultimately the culture.
Mm-hmm. Alan, do you think he makes it sound kind of simple, and
I'm a simplistic kind of guy,
which is one of the reasons I like you so much. But it's not that simple, especially when you put in the relationship with the vendors that these agencies have on trying to accomplish some of these things.
That's right, and it's not simple. And the first step, however, has been to document the performance and the objectives to be achieved, and we haven't had that either.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm I'm cautiously optimistic that we're on a path, although we've been down similar paths before that have had a relatively short shelf life. But having the documentation themselves and the initiative in one place, very helpful. So I won't be overly critical, but we shouldn't deceive ourselves that this is only the first couple of steps of a very long process, even to link performance to budgets and budget decisions. So compliment them for taking the initiative. It's a hard road to go, but it is a long one to go as well.
Yes.
With the data that's there, the issue then becomes, if we assume, and I think it's fair to assume that based on the reviews that you've given, I talked to Robert on the show yesterday afternoon, that the data looks pretty good, looks pretty clean. So then the issue becomes, what do we do with this and how do we use it to change things? And that's where we get into the interpretation stuff, right?
Right. And the other thing is that, and if you look at some of these things, I don't know if it's consistent throughout the site, but there are downloadable data sets that you can download and then interpret independently.
Mm-hmm. The performance.gov website and all of our coverage on it is at federalnewsradio.com. John Kaminsky's story is from the Washington Post. The headline is OMB puts accountability online, and all of our Federal News Countdown stories are linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up, the number one story of the week as selected by Alan Shvatkin on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job, but I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Balinti. Researchers have evaluated more than 240,000 adults aged 50 to 71 who were free of cancer, cardiovascular, and respiratory disease.
We found that the more time our participants spent watching television, the greater their increase of risk of early death was.
Dr. Charles Matthews is an investigator at NIH.
Somewhere above 3 to 4 hours per day of watching television, the risk appeared to increase, at least in our data.
Dr. Matthews explains that the data came from the long-term follow-up study of individuals enrolled in the NIH AARP Diet and Health Study. For more information on the study, visit the website dietandhealth.cancer.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my partner and specialist in family law, Dave Zangrilli, where we're going to be talking about the provocative topic of adultery. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. For more on the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for August is Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization repairing and providing donated cars to low-income families. A car is the most valuable poverty-fighting tool that can be provided to a low-income family, and Vehicles for Change has awarded over 3,500 cars since 1999. The car increases the opportunity for better employment and family activities never before possible. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
The Diet Yo-Yo from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Like the tide on a beach, the weight of yo-yo dieters fluctuates. It's not one specific diet. Yo-yo dieters struggle to keep lost weight off, losing it and gaining it back in cycles. A longevity study compared lifespan for mice on a high-fat diet, a low-fat diet, and a yo-yo diet. Dr. Edward List is at Ohio University.
Yo-yo dieting was indeed healthier than remaining obese.
The majority of people who diet are considered yo-yo dieters. For those struggling with weight problems, Dr. List suggests,
first and foremost, people lose weight one time, diet and exercise, and keep it off. Live a healthy lifestyle.
The study, supported by the National Institutes of Health, was presented at the 2011 Endocrine Society meeting in Boston. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Profile America, Friday, August 26th. Two geniuses in the field of electronics whose inventions changed the way Americans live were born in August. One was Lee DeForest, whose birthday is noted today. He invented the electron tube among his hundreds of patents and became known as the father of radio. The idea of wireless broadcasting was so unbelievable he was once arrested for selling stock to underwrite his invention. The other was television pioneer Philo Farnsworth. He conceived the idea of television broadcasting while still in high school and realized his dream at the age of 21. His first transmitted image was a dollar sign. The ideas of DeForest and Farnsworth are now nearly universal. Homes in America have an average of 8 radios and nearly 3 television sets. Profile America is in its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Alan Shpotkin of the Professional Services Council. And Alan, your number one story of the week is technically not a news story. It's a commentary piece in the Washington Post by Eric Cantor, the majority leader in the House. The headline is Removing the Obstacles to Economic Growth. And we talked during the break that Mr. Cantor accomplished something significant, I think. The first three sentences of his piece are sentences I think everybody can agree on. After that is when he kind of he goes into his political mode. But he talks about the fact that the debt crisis is one challenge that we're facing, and the jobs crisis is another challenge that we're facing, and then goes on to talk about his solutions for those.
And that's why I selected it, because as we've been talking throughout this show, the confluence of policy and budgets are ripe in everybody's mind, but the number one issue that we've really not spent much time on here today or elsewhere is about the jobs. And the economic growth really is, how do you generate jobs in the federal sector, in the government contractor sector, in the private sector at large. And so my selection of this was not to make a partisan statement that Mr. Cantor's suggestions and recommendations are necessarily the right one, but I think it's important that a lot of people engage in the debate, and I don't see that. So if it's not this, then what are you for?
Mm-hmm.
What do you support? What are the ideas for creating jobs? Because the president's going to make a statement in early September about jobs, and you may like what he proposes or not, but if not, then what do you support? How do we move that process along?
Why do you think that's been so hard? I mean, we've never seen anything, John, like we've seen the last 6 months or so as far as trying to figure out where to go spending wise.
Well, back in 1937, there was a very great fear that the federal government was overspending. And so the federal government cut back, and the economy went back into a second recession.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the fear, is if we know that we have a huge deficit problem, the question is when and where do you cut? Do you cut now, or do you cut later?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was something that I think that the super committee is going to have to deal with in terms of when they make proposals for cuts. Are they credible? And are they something that will not harm the economy in the near term, but mm-hmm. will, in fact, boost the economy in the long term?
We haven't talked much about the super committee on the program today, but really their work overshadows pretty much everything that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Because everything, the decisions that they make could change dramatically or change not at all every single one of the stories that we've covered
well,
today.
Well, that's right. But at the core, their recommendations are looking at how to address both the spend side as well as the deficit side, the debt problem. Remember that the agreement that was put in place in August really only covered debt increases through the end of 2012, or maybe we'll get into calendar year 2013. That is not a very long period of time. Talk about planning horizons for agencies or contractors to make decisions. And so that's why the article is really, in my view, sort of a call to what do you want to do? What are you willing to do? Where are you willing to invest the resources that the government has, the resources that the contractor community has, the resources the American people have?
Mm-hmm. As we think about the effects of all of this, the other impact, too, that it'll have, and we don't do politics a tremendous amount on this station, but there's a political element to all of this because I saw a stat over the weekend that at the level of sustained unemployment that we've had, no president's ever been reelected with unemployment in that kind of situation. And, of course, if we're here a year from now talking about the potential complete change of an administration and maybe one or both houses of Congress, that turns, again, all of these stories that we've talked about today turns them on their ears because there will be a whole different team of people doing all the planning at the agencies, and there will be a whole different team of people in Congress making the decisions about whether those budgets get approved or not. So
no president has been elected or reelected if inflation or if unemployment was higher than 7.2% over the past 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
So 7.2 seems to be the magic cutoff for being able to be reelected.
And yet nobody that I've heard on any outlet has said that the prospect exists for unemployment to go that low for not just between now and November 2012, but for the foreseeable future.
It depends on whether we have quantitative easing or not.
Oh, and I can't. I don't even have time to get into quantitative easing. We've had to leave it there, as a matter of fact. Having both of you on the show is a pleasure. John Kaminsky, IBM Center for the Business of Government, Alan Shvatkin, Professional Services Council. Thank you both for
Thank
a great
you.
Countdown show.
Thank you,
show.
Francis.
We are continuing with In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a few moments. When we come back, 10 years after the Homeland Security Department's founded, an inside look at how it stood up. That's next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.